Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta
right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars, because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know, a production of iHeartRadio.
Stuff You Should Know is recorded in front of a live studio audience.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh, and there's Chuck, and this is part two of our very special two-part episode on sitcoms. Sitcoms. Everybody.
That's right. And we're going to shoot for 30 minutes here.
Mm-hmm.
If you remember in episode one, we explained all about how sitcoms are made and the history of sitcoms. And today we begin with part two of whether or not these things were successful. And boy, were they.
Yeah. Apparently between 1950 and 2019, the top rated show for the entire year, in America at least, was a sitcom. For 26 different seasons. So that's a pretty significant number, considering there's all sorts of different kinds of shows. Sitcoms are not the only kind of show out there.
Yeah, that's 40%. I guarantee you that between 1950 and 2000, that number is more like 80%.
I would also say, especially if you were going from 1970 to 2000, it's probably 100%.
you're probably right.
104% as an homage to our menstruation episode, which I biffed pretty bad.
Well, we both biffed that. Here's a remarkable statistic, though. If you refer back to our Nielsen ratings episode, I Love Lucy in 1952-1953 had a 67.3 Nielsen rating, which meant that close to 70% of every household in the United States was watching that TV show.
Okay.
That's crazy.
And it's the highest season rating for any TV show ever. But, Chuck, and Ed uses for comparison, the highest rated show in 2001 was Friends, and they had a 15.
Yeah.
Lucy had a 70, right?
And Friends was huge.
Friends was huge. Consider this, though. Lucy had it way easier. There were fewer TVs and fewer shows to choose from when Friends came around.
Is this when you punch holes in it?
Yeah, because let's say 10 people had a TV. Lucy had 7 of them watching, but Friends, you know, 500 million TVs were out there, and 15% of them were tuned to it. So if you really think about it, Friends was more dominant than Lucy.
Yeah. We should call this section In Defense of Friends, or Why I Learned to Hate I Love Lucy.
It's not that, and no, I'm also not defending Friends, believe me.
So these shows back then were shot on film, 35mm film, but it's still different. These cameras weren't like movie cameras at the same time either. Mm-hmm. And that's a bunch of technical stuff we won't get into. But starting in 71, when All in the Family debuted, we started shooting things on videotape. And if you've ever seen those sitcoms of the 70s in front of a studio audience, they had a very specific videotape look. It was kind of great. A lot of nostalgia for people in our demographic, for Gen X and I guess some younger boomers. But this to us was sort of the heyday, and I think generally the heyday of sitcoms.
Yeah, because in the 50s, there were still tons of variety shows and quiz shows that kind of edged sitcoms out. The 60s, there were like lots of westerns. But part of the problem with it, too, is sitcoms were corny and phony and didn't really speak to anybody's actual life. They were escapist, right? And in the 70s, the very early 70s, starting with All in the Family, sitcoms started to take on actual issues like out there in the real world, but they were doing it in a funny funny way, so it was more digestible and easy to kind of think about and talk about with your friends than it would otherwise if it, you know, 60 Minutes was just shoving it down your throat.
Yeah, and, you know, in a funny way, in that episodes still had to have some laughs, but there were some episodes of some very famous sitcoms that went very serious and dark on what was later to be called like a special episode.
Yeah.
There are a few real notable ones. One was all, and I remember seeing this episode as a kid and I was like shaken because I didn't know any of this stuff. I think it's where I learned about that sexual assault was a thing. And it was when Edith Bunker was almost, or attempted, sexually assaulted on the show. And that episode was, very, very, very serious and a marked departure from what sitcoms were all about.
Yeah, Maude is also frequently pointed to as having like an early effect on tackling like hard stuff when the main character, Maude, in a two-part very special episode, chooses to get an abortion to terminate her pregnancy when she gets pregnant at age 47. And that was like, I mean, if you did that today, it would be controversial. And this was like the early mid-70s that they did that. So people are like TV show producers are starting to like really take on more and more stuff. And that very special episode did become a thing beyond the 70s. Like another really good example is Different Strokes.
Yeah.
Very special two-part episode about child exploitation with Mr. What was the guy's name from WKRP, the station owner?
Oh, Mr. Carlson, he was the guy?
Yes.
Oh.
And you don't, if you've not seen it, then good, don't, because you'll never look at Mr. Carlson the same way again, because he played this creepy child molester like perfectly. He owned a bicycle shop. He lured Arnold and Dudley over there, took pictures of them in their underwear.
Yeah, I remember.
It was a like really jarring episode. And one of the hallmarks, which I know we've made fun of before in previous episodes of a very special episode, is the audience doesn't clap at the end. Mm-hmm. And it makes it even more weird and jarring and creepy to end an episode like that. But that's definitely a hallmark of it.
Yeah, and also that you mentioned that was a two-parter. The All in the Family episode with Edith was, I believe, just a 1 hour. I don't even think they aired it in two parts. I think they just broke format entirely.
Yeah.
And it really shows that, I mean, the Maude, when Maude got an abortion, that was pre-Roe v. Wade even. It really shows that despite it being kind of a corny, silly format generally, these writers and producers, like, I think they knew they had an audience to really sort of get a message across at times, as long as they didn't like hammer it too hard. I think shows like MASH dabbled much more in that realm than other ones.
Oh yeah, for sure.
But as far as doing this kind of stuff on All in the Family and Different Strokes, it was groundbreaking stuff.
It was, but it got picked up by just about everybody. Remember our last Christmas episode, we talked about that ALF Christmas special with the dying girl.
That's right. Oh my God. It was so weird.
Yeah, everybody did that. I think everybody with the one exception of Small Wonder did a very special episode. Saved by the Bell did that episode where Jesse was addicted to speed. Remember?
I didn't really watch that show.
Okay. Well, that one alone is worth watching, yeah. At least for the—
Who was Jesse? Which one was that?
The Jesse Spano, she was Slater's girlfriend. She'd be so mad that I just referred to her as Slater's girlfriend. Slater was her boyfriend.
Was that Tiffany Amber Thiessen?
No. I don't remember her name. She went on to star in Showgirls.
Elizabeth Berkley?
Yes.
Right. Yeah, I forgot she started on that.
Jesse Spano. So she was really trying to prepare for studying finals. And then, like, there was this show coming up where she was going to sing the Pointer Sisters' I'm So Excited. And so she was taking all this speed, and Zach found out about it. Was like, you know, throwing the speed out the window, and Jesse was like, I'm so excited. That's
really funny.
It's really worth watching, man. And watch the whole episode because it's a masterpiece of like unintentional hilarity from start to finish.
Yeah, I think I was a little too old for that show when it hit its prime, but I definitely saw it here and there because I'd know all those characters, basically. Sure.
It's still on Sunday mornings on MeTV.
Is it really?
Mm-hmm.
So sitcoms obviously hit their sort of zenith in the 70s and 80s, into the 90s even, of course, with shows like Seinfeld and Friends were huge. But in the 2000s is when they really kind of started to dip, of course, thanks to not thanks to, but unfortunately because of things like reality TV. The gold standard, like we talked about, was hitting syndication.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's the reason Larry David and Jerry Seinfeld and every member of Friends, I mean, they all went on to do other stuff, but, you know, it's why if Matthew Perry never worked another day in his life, he doesn't have to, because they are still all making money hand over fist, because these shows will live forever. They'll be showing Seinfeld in 100 years, probably.
Yeah, because you make a show and it's a hit show, and you can take those episodes and sell them to one person, sell them to another person, and sell them again and again and again. So this one body of work just turns into a cash register. I saw that for Seinfeld and Larry David, or the show in general, since it entered syndication, mm-hmm. Has generated $3 billion in syndication fees.
That's amazing. And Ed points out, you know, very aptly, one of the reasons, and there are many factors why those kind of sitcoms aren't around as much, certainly prestige TV and mm-hmm. sort of that's the thing now. But when you launch a show like that these days, you're competing not just against what's on right then, but you're still competing against Seinfeld,
right,
and The Office and Friends and Frasier. Like, people still watch this comfort food time and time again. I do it. We all do it.
Yeah, and I mean, it was, you know, popular enough in syndication, but now it's on streaming. You can watch every episode back to back if you've got a long weekend, you know, or 10 years, one of the two.
All right, let's take our first commercial break.
Okay.
Because the fine folks at Ben Gay have been waiting.
Want to learn about a pterosaur and call it pterodactyl? How to take a perfect boob and all about fractals? Genghis Khan, Attila the Hun, the Lizzie Borden murders and the cannibal runs. Gonna explain everything to your brain. Explode. Just Chuck and Josh. There's stuff you should know. Word up, Jerry.
Hey, everybody. It's halftime and the scoreboard is not looking good. You're feeling low and not sure you can pull out a win. And that's when you have to dig deep, lift your head up, and say to yourself, time to get back in the game. Pull off some bank heists and take as much of your friend's money as you possibly can.
That's right. The smash hit mobile game Monopoly Go lets you compete with your friends to get the most riches and the biggest empire. It's the Monopoly you love, but on your phone, anytime, with tons of new twists, including leaderboards to compare your progress to your buddies.
That's right. You can play on countless dynamic Monopoly boards. You can make your friends bankrupt by smashing their landmarks with a wrecking ball, and you can charge other players' rent for your iconic properties.
Plus, you can even work with your friends to crack open community chests in tournaments to get rewards and climb the leaderboard.
So get back out there, put on your game face, and download Monopoly Go, now free on the App Store or Google Play.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
iHeart Podcast Update. This week on your free iHeartRadio app.
Fodor's Guide to Espionage. A 60s-era spy story of the world's first and greatest travel writer, Eugene Fodor, as he jet sets around the globe. Tongue Unbroken Season 2. This podcast explores complex concepts of identity, resilience, erasure, and genocide. Table for Two Season 2. Think of the show as a deconstructed Oscar party in podcast form. Each episode takes place over the romance of a meal and feels like you're seated next to a different guest at that dinner.
Hear these podcasts and more on your free iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Who hasn't heard names like Achilles or Odysseus, Cassandra, Medusa? But how much do you know about them from the ancient world? Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the podcast bringing the ancient sources to life. Greek myth and history is timeless, and unless you've been living under a rock, you have seen just how true that is today. But there is so much more to these characters and stories than what pop culture can do justice. I'm Liv Albert, the host of Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, and every week I bring you stories from the ancient world, both mythological and historical, to breathe new life into these thousands of years old stories. I'm also regularly joined by some of the most brilliant names in the field of archaeology and ancient history, authors of your favorite retellings from today, and everyone in between. Join me as I dive into the wild world of the ancient Greeks and their stories. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Learning stuff with Joshua and Charles. Stuff you should know.
I hope Ben Gay is actually going to give us some money for this.
We should maybe alert ad sales. They'd be like, who? Yeah. Are they making fun of us?
So, Chuck, like we said, 26 out of, you know, about 40% of seasons from 1950 to 2000 were sitcoms, the highest rated show.
Yeah, 2019.
There's a reason that they're so popular. One, they're like really easy to digest. They're funny. Mm-hmm. That's the point of them. But there's another thing too, that when you zoom in on a set of like four or six characters and you spend, you know, half hour nuggets in their lives in just very small worlds of their sets, paying attention to their foibles and their weirdness and who they are and like what they believe in, the audience really gets to know those people.
Yeah.
And you can really play with that as a writer and a actor and a producer. And some really great, like all-time great characters have kind of come out of that. And one of the cool things you can do is make a character one way, and then all of a sudden out of left field, you can have them do something else. And it suddenly makes them, you know, human, whereas they used to be like a one-dimensional, hilarious person.
Yeah, but that can really shake up an audience who is invested in a character. Mm-hmm. Because I think there are so many shows where Friends is an obvious example, or Sex and the City, where most women, I think, who watched Sex and the City, and I watch it too, but I think it was largely like a show that appealed to women, would all say like,
here's the shovel, Chuck.
I know. I'm a Samantha, or I'm a, you know, or I'm a Joey, or I'm a Ross. Like, I think people kind of looked for themselves in these characters, and everyone had their favorites. People would watch these shows and maybe hate one of the characters out of the six.
Sure.
Every time they came on the screen, but still get into it. It's pretty interesting. They're super voyeuristic. They hold a prism up about sort of our society, and you know, they're aimed at the largest demographic. So a lot of these shows would be about like working class families who struggle to pay their mortgage, or who get into the sort of you know, there were zany situations, but a lot of times there were situations based in reality such that people could really identify, like, I've been in that same situation with my boss before.
Yeah, or like Al Bundy has to, like, you know, sell a bunch of blood to, like, get his car fixed or something like that. Like, that's a great
right.
situation for an episode that you can resolve in a half hour that, yeah, maybe the viewer hasn't ever sold blood to get his car fixed, but has maybe been in that position where they were had to consider doing that, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. They also, I think to their credit, have been able to hold up, not a mirror, what's it called when you're looking at someone else? I guess a lens. On people that aren't like you.
The telescope.
Yeah, a telescope for people who you don't identify with and you can learn something about. There was a period in the 70s where you had these three great shows, The Jeffersons, Good Times, and Sanford and Son, mm-hmm. at a time where it gave white America a real view into three very sort of set demographics of black America. And we'll talk about spinoffs, but The Jeffersons was a spinoff. They were originally the Bunker's Neighbors, mm-hmm. and George Jefferson opened up a dry cleaner that hit it big, so they got to move it on up to the deluxe apartment in the sky.
Sure.
You had Good Times, sort of that middle ground family that kind of struggled a bit. And then you had Sanford and Son as the junkyard guys. And, you know, it gives and with other ethnicities as well, it really gave, I think, largely white America a chance to sort of, even though it may not be the most realistic, sort of take a peek at what other how other people lived.
Yeah. Yeah, which is great. I mean, that's a great part of sitcoms. Like, it can make you identify with people you might not interact with normally, right?
Absolutely.
And it can go the other way, too. Like, it can make us very sympathetic to the rich. Like, you know, people like watching affluent families as well, just as much as they like watching families that are struggling financially, too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Fresh Prince, The Cosby Show, he was a doctor. Mm-hmm. Again, The Jeffersons, so... It's interesting how sometimes people love watching the sort of working class families. Sometimes they like the escapist of watching the rich families. Mm-hmm. There's something for everyone.
Yeah, and sometimes it's not even a thing. Like in Cheers, there was not really a lot of class stuff.
Yeah.
It was basically everything but that. Like no one seemed to have any real money troubles, but
yeah,
also nobody was particularly
totally.
Rich. It was just not a thing. So it can also just be totally absent. I've got a little tidbit for you I want to throw in.
Let's hear it.
I read that George Jefferson was mentioned on All in the Family 3 years before he physically appeared on it.
Really?
Because Norman Lear knew exactly who he wanted for George Jefferson, Sherman Helmsley.
Uh-huh.
But Helmsley was involved in like a really lengthy Broadway contract that he couldn't get out of.
Oh.
So Norman Lear just set it up and waited for him to come, and he finally arrived and made TV history.
That's pretty cool to like hold out that long for an actor that you fall in love with.
Yeah, it was a good move too. I mean, Norman Lear is a genius.
Oh yeah. I mean, yeah, sure. We can't talk about sitcoms without bowing at the feet of Norman Lear.
And now we've done that, so the box is checked. So, Chuck, one of the best things you could possibly do is sit around and talk about great moments in sitcom history. And yeah. I propose we do just that right now.
I'm sure there are entire podcasts that do this.
And we should also start each one with, remember the time?
Well, we went over some of the more serious ones, but I think we should stick to sort of the more fun ones now. Mm-hmm. Obviously, sort of tops of the list, if we're going historically or chronologically, is the there's a couple, the grape stomping and I Love Lucy, but especially the conveyor belt episode from September 15th, 1952, with Lucy and Ethel working in the factory with a conveyor belt. I think it was chocolates.
Yeah, it was chocolates, and the conveyor belt speeds up, and like Lucy and Ethel are just doing this physical comedy that like
is
astounding, especially when you stop and realize like this was live to tape, basically, you know?
Yeah.
There was another thing that Lucy really broke ground on with the birth of Little Ricky. The film or the show was either aired or shot about 12 hours after her real life son born. Yeah.
Wow.
And then they aired the birth of Little Ricky, which was huge. But Mary Kay and Johnny did it first.
You're in love with that show.
I think they're an unsung show. They're another one that was not preserved in any way. It was filmed to Kinescope, but the Dumont Network, which was really cheap, threw all of their reels into the East River, apparently. And there's one episode left of Mary Kay and Johnny, and it's at like a media museum in Los Angeles.
You know, now that you mention that, our colleague Alex's show, Ephemeral, he has an episode about the Kinescope.
Okay.
Like an entire episode. I remember now.
I think that was in season one.
Yeah. Great, great show. Yeah. So maybe we should talk about the Mary Tyler Moore Show, one of the great shows.
Yeah. I mean, like if you bow at Norman Lear's feet, you have to bow at Mary Tyler Moore's feet too.
Yeah. There was an episode in 1975 called Chuckles Bites the Dust. Historic TV episode where a clown is killed in a parade accident, and it tackles death in a really funny way. Like, they definitely sort of talk about mortality and stuff like that, but the whole time they're laughing and they can't contain their laughter about this clown and how the clown died. And it's a very funny episode.
It is, because poor Mary Tyler Moore has to play it straight for everybody else and like is scolding them for laughing, and they're all trying not to laugh, and she's having to keep it really serious.
Yeah.
And then in addition to that, there were some really great jokes in there, like one-offs, where Ted Baxter is asked if Mary can have a ride to the funeral with him, and he goes, sure, the more the merrier.
The great Ted Knight.
Yeah. It was Ted Baxter, right?
I think that was the character's name, right?
Okay, yeah. And the actor was Ted Knight?
Yeah, yeah, from Caddyshack. And from Too Close for Comfort.
Yep, another sitcom.
I actually quite enjoyed that show because it was, I thought, who was the guy? Jim J. Bullock was very funny. Mm-hmm. I thought Ted Knight was hysterical. And of course, as like a young boy, I just thought the beautiful blonde and brunette daughters, I was just like, give me that show all day long.
Right. I think that is how a lot of shows got popular. Like Three's Company. It's just dreck, man. Like the writing is terrible.
No.
Like the plots are terrible.
Oh, come on.
The physical comedy is good. Like John Ritter's great. But if you think about it, he's really the only good actor or character, at least in the whole show, because he was the only one that had good stuff written for him. Ugh. But you had like Chrissy and Janet and Cindy, I think, came after Chrissy. I'm sure that definitely contributed to it.
Come on, Mr. Roper?
Okay, Mr. Roper is pretty funny.
We talked about that in the Fern Bar episode of our Totally. Bars podcast.
Totally.
Happy Days, of course, we have to mention Fonzie Jumps the Shark, which was 1977. And of course, that became, in the episode, Fonzie literally water skis and jumps a ring of sharks. I think it was sharks, maybe just one shark. Because jumps the sharks would be
the
phrase.
Doesn't have the same ring to it.
I can't remember how many sharks it was, but that became, it sort of looked back as the moment where Happy Days went bad and now is used as an expression of when any show goes bad. Mm-hmm. But Ed points out, like, there were a lot of good Happy Days episodes and seasons that happened after that.
True, but that same season, good. Season 5, they also had Mork from Ork arrive at Arnold's Drive-In.
Classic.
And it is classic, and it turned out for the best. But the point is, it was like a huge departure from, you know, the norm that show had set up for itself in the previous 5 seasons. So I think it's not even necessarily just a show turns horrible. It's just it takes like much more bizarre turns, you know, to maybe boost ratings. I think that's really what Jumping the Shark is for me.
Yeah, I think you're right.
The other thing that stuck out to me too is apparently that phrase is from 1986. It's that old.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there was some particular dude who came up with it and wrote a book about it and started a website later on, and was really like a single person or maybe 2 people introduced that slang into the zeitgeist.
That person right now, if they're listening, says, "Some particular dude." Thank you.
You're right. Thanks a lot, other dude.
Thanks a lot, master researcher.
All right, fine. I take that challenge.
I can talk before we break about a couple of more landmark events in TV sitcom history. One, of course, is the final episode of MASH. Notable because, A, it was one of the biggest shows ever, and B, because it was one of the biggest final finales of all time, and all the way up, and this was in 1983, and it was the number one top audience of any broadcast in TV history until the Super Bowl in 2010.
Mm-hmm. That was...
What a run.
Like, one of the best, like, television episodes of all time. Like, it just got in the breadbasket over and over again. It was called Goodbye, Farewell, and Amen.
Ellen coming out was a big deal. There was a gay character in Billy Crystal on the sitcom Soap. Mm-hmm. But Ellen actually coming out on the show after she came out in real life was a very big deal. And conservatives hated it.
Yeah, get this. Jerry Falwell called her Ellen DeGenerate for coming out as gay. He called her a degenerate for saying, yes, I'm actually gay, rather than staying in the closet. Isn't that disgusting?
What a good dude.
And that episode, they codenamed it The Puppy, so no one would have any idea what was coming.
It's pretty funny. Yeah. All right, should we take our final break?
Yeah, let's. And then we'll come back and talk about more sitcom stuff.
Want to learn about a pterosaur and call it pterodactyl? How to take a perfect boob and all about fractals? Genghis Khan, Attila the Hun, the Lizzie Borden murders and the cannibal runs. Gonna explain everything to your brain explodes. Just Chuck and Josh, there's stuff you should know. Word up, Jerry.
Hey everybody, it's halftime and the scoreboard is not looking good. You're feeling low and not sure you can pull out a win, and that's when you have to dig deep, lift your head up, and say to yourself, time to get back in the game. Pull off some bank heists and take as much of your friends' money as you possibly can.
That's right. The smash hit mobile game Monopoly Go lets you compete with your friends to get the most riches and the biggest empire. It's the Monopoly you love, but on your phone, anytime, with tons of new twists, including leaderboards to compare your progress to your buddies.
That's right. You can play on countless dynamic Monopoly boards. You can make your friends bankrupt by smashing their landmarks with a wrecking ball, and you can charge other players rent for your iconic properties.
Plus, you can even work with your friends to crack open community chests in tournaments to get rewards and climb the leaderboard.
So get back out there, put on your game face, and download Monopoly Go, now free on the App Store or Google Play.
iHeart Podcast Update. This week on your free iHeart Radio app. Fodor's Guide to Espionage, a 60s-era spy story of the world's first and greatest travel writer, Eugene Fodor, as he jet sets around the globe. Tongue Unbroken Season 2. This podcast explores complex concepts of identity, resilience, erasure, and genocide. Table for Two Season 2. Think of the show as a deconstructed Oscar party in podcast form. Each episode takes place over the romance of a meal and feels like you're seated next to a different guest at that dinner. Hear these podcasts and more on your free iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Who hasn't heard names like Achilles or Odysseus, Cassandra, Medusa? But how much do you know about them from the ancient world? Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, is the podcast bringing the ancient sources to life. Greek myth and history is timeless, and unless you've been living under a rock, you have seen just how true that is today. But there is so much more to these characters and stories than what pop culture can do justice. I'm Liv Albert, the host of Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, and every week I bring you stories from the ancient world, both mythological and historical, to breathe new life into these thousands of years old stories. I'm also regularly joined by some of the most brilliant names in the field of archaeology and ancient history, authors of your favorite retellings from today, and everyone in between. Join me as I dive into the wild world of the ancient Greeks and their stories. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Learning Stuff with Joshua and Charles. Stuff you should know.
All right, we're going to finish up with what Ed calls odds and ends, which I think is perfect because some of these are significant moments. Some of these are just little other random bits, tropes, what have you. Sure. One is a trope for sure, which is the couch in the center of the room.
Right.
It's obviously done this way because it just makes a lot of sense to have sort of the central action being framed around the center part of a living room. Mm-hmm. But it's funny, if you go back and look at All in the Family, The Cosby Show, and at least Married with Children, those three sets are almost identical in that you have your entry door on the right, the couch in the middle, and a set of stairs behind you.
Right.
And then, of course, shows like Friends and Seinfeld. And it's not like landmark to say, hey, let's center the action on the center of the room. But the couch in the center of the room definitely became a trope.
It allows actors to interact with the person on the couch without standing in between them and the camera. Stand behind them, right? So it makes total sense in sitcom world, but it is bizarre if you step back and think about it. That actually ties in, Chuck, with another little tidbit about sitcoms. It's called The Fourth Wall. And it's not just sitcoms, but any TV show. But it particularly applies to sitcoms because if you look at a sitcom set, there's usually three walls. There's the back wall and two side walls. But the front wall is imaginary, and it allows you, the viewer, to look in on the action. But the people in the action, the actual characters, don't recognize that you're looking back at them, or they're not supposed to. But you can really toy with this whole thing because every once in a while a character can turn and address the viewer, and that's called breaking the fourth wall.
Yeah, which can be fun. It can be funny if Burt Reynolds does it and gives his little signature laugh in a movie. It's funny. If Ferris Bueller does it, it's funny. It can be a little weird and disconcerting. So breaking the fourth wall is something that whenever it's entertained by a director or production or writer or whatever, it's always very much like, let's put a lot of thought into this because it can really go bad.
That's right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. You don't want to do it wrong because I would guess you could sink like a whole show doing it wrong.
Yeah. It's not a willy-nilly thing.
How about spinoffs?
I love spinoffs. There have been a lot of very bad ones. Mm-hmm. But in some cases, spinoffs have been at least as popular as the original show. Mm-hmm. You have great shows like MASH, which had Trapper John MD, which was pretty popular. And then the very not great Aftermath.
Yeah, that was weird.
Terrible title.
And then that's pretty good, too. Two's not bad. What about Happy Days, though?
Happy Days had Mork and Mindy, of course. Very popular show. Joni Loves Chachi. Not so great.
Laverne and Shirley, that was from Happy Days, too, right?
A great, great show. And then there were two more, which I didn't even know about. One called Blanksy's Beauties and one called Out of the Blue.
And the reason you don't know about them is because they were terrible shows, but also, like, they introduced Mork in season 5 and gave him a spinoff. These guys were introduced, they would introduce the character Out of the Blue for the first time, and then the next night they would premiere their spinoff show. And it just was a format they were trying, and it just didn't quite work out. Yeah, it didn't work very well.
The Jeffersons I mentioned spun from All in the Family. Another really popular show was A Different World that spun out from the Cosby Show. Mm-hmm. Benson was a spinoff.
From what?
Of Soap.
Oh, okay.
And I loved Benson as a kid. I loved that show. Mm-hmm. Facts of Life was a great spinoff from Different Strokes, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Frasier, one of the all-time great shows, spun off from one of the all-time great shows.
Yeah, from Cheers. You remember Frasier was, I think he dated Diane for a little while, didn't he?
He was introduced dating Diane and then later dated Lilith, of course, one of the great characters.
Right, yeah. And she actually made it over to the spinoff, too.
Yeah, yeah, she appeared on Frasier for sure.
So All in the Family is apparently the all-time spinoff champ with 7 shows that it produced.
Wow.
The reason it was able to do this is because it was so popular, some of its spinoffs had spinoffs. Like, I think Rhoda was a spinoff from All in the Family, and it ended up spinning off Gloria, I think, or something like that. Yeah. Uh-huh. So, all told, All in the Family generated 860 episodes of television.
Wow.
Yeah, that's impressive.
That's almost like the Tommy What's-His-Name verse from St.
Tommy Westfall universe?
Tommy Westfall universe.
Yeah, it is. Very much like that.
I was trying to explain that to Emily and some people the other day and just totally botched it. I need to retake that one, too.
Or just get me on the phone. Put me on speakerphone.
I should. And then, recently, we don't get a lot of spinoffs anymore, but we should definitely shout out Grown-ish, which is a newer spinoff of Black-ish.
Right.
So it still happens.
Another thing that happened that was kind of like a landmark bomb in the sitcom world, and not bomb in the bad way, but like meaning it was consequential. The Flintstones came out in 1960, and up to that point, no one had even conceived of an animated sitcom, but that's absolutely what it was. So much so, it was essentially an animated ripoff of The Honeymooners based in prehistoric times.
Yeah. And animated sitcoms became a staple of TV, a primetime television, with the Jetsons, of course, our beloved Simpsons and Futurama, and now Bob's Burgers is one of the Family Guy, of course, and then Bob's Burgers, one of the longest running current sitcoms, animated sitcoms.
Yeah, there's also Rick and Morty, South Park. There's tons of animated sitcoms now, and they can all thank the Flintstones for that, and to a lesser extent, the Jetsons.
It's funny to think of South Park is a sitcom, but I guess it is.
Totally is.
It's just so offbeat. It doesn't seem to, fit that mold, but it is. Absolutely. It's a sitcom.
And then, Chuck, there's one other, significant moment in TV I want to, definitely shout out. It was the last episode of Newhart that aired in 1990. Did you see it?
I did. I was a big fan of both the original Bob Newhart show in reruns and then loved the Newhart show where he was in the first one, he was a psychologist.
Mm-hmm.
Married to Suzanne Plachette. And in the second Newhart, he was a B&B operator in Vermont, right?
Yeah, named Dick Loudon. And the second show, Newhart, was much more weird and wacky and just kind of went out there, whereas the Bob Newhart show from the 70s was a little more like down to earth and, stayed. It had Newhart's deadpan, humor. I just accidentally did a Newhart impression. And so in the last episode of Newhart, the second show, it starts out, the last couple of minutes start out in a darkened room, and all of a sudden Bob wakes up, or Dick Loudon wakes up, you think, and it turns out he wakes up his wife next to him, and it's Suzanne Plachette, his wife from the Bob Newhart show from the 70s, and it turns out the entirety of Newhart took place in a dream of Bob Hartley's in the show, the Bob Newhart show. It's one of the greatest series finales of all time, of any show, not just sitcoms.
Absolutely. It's for my money, maybe the only time the it was all a dream thing worked to perfection, because it's kind of become a trope, like a bad trope, where it just is a sort of a lazy way to do something.
Sure, the reset button.
Yeah, but boy, it just, they pulled their card at the right time. The original Newhart show was so beloved, I think, and Suzanne Plachette, so recognizable and beloved. It was just perfection. It worked great.
Totally. Something that didn't work great, and I say this is the thing we go out on. How about that?
All right.
It's called the Darren switch, or the other Darren, and it happened on the
Dicks.
Right, that's true. It happened on the sixth season of Bewitched.
Right, and this was, Darren was the husband, Samantha's husband on Bewitched. Mm-hmm. Great, great show. Originally played by Dick York, and then another Dick came in. Dick Sargent came in, and they just swapped it out. They never explained it. This has happened quite a few other times in TV history, too.
Right, so much so that, like I said, it's a trope called The Other Darren, where they just bring in a new actor without any explanation whatsoever to start playing an established role. It happens most often on soap operas, I've heard.
For sure. Some of the other notable sitcoms, though, the mom on The Fresh Prince was swapped out.
Oh, yeah.
On that 70s show, this one is very sad, Eric's older sister was played by Lisa Robin Kelly at first, and she had drug and alcohol problems, and she was booted from the show and replaced and ended up dying of a drug overdose.
Oh, no.
Morty Seinfeld was different in one episode.
Like in the middle of the run?
Well, it was the first time he was ever in an episode. It was played by a different actor.
Really?
Just for the one episode. And then we got the great Barney Martin just owned, you know, he played Liza Minnelli's dad in Arthur II, one of my favorite comedies. But if you look back to that first Morty, Larry David didn't like it. He's like, he's too soft. And he swapped him out for Barney Martin.
That's awesome. Sometimes your father forgets and I have to steal.
Ross's ex-wife, Carol, changed.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay, I knew that.
Angie on 30 Rock was another one-episode run before they switched to a different actor.
Which one was Angie?
Angie was... Who was Angie? I haven't seen 30 Rock in so long. I think she was just on the crew, maybe.
Okay.
I can't remember, though, exactly.
Okay.
Or was she... I can't remember. Bewitched also had a switch in that the Gladys, the nosy neighbor... the actor who played her died of ovarian cancer, and so they did a double switch.
Wow, twice.
And then finally, in true Mitch Hurwitz fashion, Mitch Hurwitz, he was the showrunner for Arrested Development. And you remember Anne, the boyfriend, or I'm sorry, the girlfriend of, of what's-his-face, Michael Cera, was like completely forgettable, and the dad never, no one ever remembered who she was.
Yeah.
So his idea was to have a different actor play Anne in every episode.
Is that right?
Yeah, to kind of, you know, just make fun of the trope a little bit. And he did that twice, and he ended up really, really liking the second actor so much, I think he was like, I can't, like, fire you.
Right.
So he did it once, and then had the same actor player, which
That's
was pretty
awesome.
Funny.
Good Man, idea. Man, that guy is brilliant.
Good stuff.
So I guess that's it for sitcoms, huh? Like we could just keep talking about significant sitcom moments all day, but I think we should probably stop.
I think so. We ran a couple of minutes long, but do you have anything you want to retake this week?
No, it's all good this time.
All right, great.
Well, thanks for joining us, everybody. If you want to get in touch with us and let us know what you thought about the two-part, very special sitcom episode, you can send us an email to stuffpodcast@iheartradio.com.
Stuff You Should Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. But you know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line, thanks to Visible. It's true. So switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com.
Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, And how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
Hey, everybody. I want to talk to you for a second here about Canva, specifically Canva presentations that are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation. So start designing today at canva.com. Design for work. Just go to Canva, C-A-N-V-A.com.